Good evening. Welcome to the third part in our Bishul B'Shabbes Refresher series. I want to thank Mrs. Yael Hirsch for sponsoring tonight's shiur and this whole series, all three shiurim, in memory of her beloved sister, Odelia Bas Rav Shimon Tanami. The neshama of Odelia should have an ilui neshama in the zechus of all the incredible Talmud Torah derabim of the past two shiurim, tonight's shiur, and all the listenings to the recordings of these shiurim on YU Torah. The first two already uploaded on YU Torah and have received many dozens of hits already. So hopefully that all that learning should be le'ili nishmas Odelia Bas Rav Shimon. I'd like to tell you what I want to talk about tonight. We're going to finish off our 2 weeks ago we talked about the halachas of shehiyah of warming up foods on Friday. Last week we talked about chazara, which is the halachas of not warming foods up on Friday, but warming up foods on Shabbos. We talked about six different ways you can warm up foods on Shabbos. And tonight, I want to talk about two or three other topics. And I'll tell you what they are, and then we'll go into them. Number one, what about somebody who has a Gentile available in their kitchen on Shabbos? Can you ask the Gentile to help you warm your foods up on Shabbos? Certain cases of that's going to be the first part. We'll have 4 points relating to that. Related to having a guy help you in the warm-up foods for the kitchen. Then we'll talk about different scenarios. What happens if a person did not follow the halachas that they should have followed in terms of preparing the foods to be warmed before Shabbos and warming foods on Shabbos? They did something wrong. They took something out of the fridge that shouldn't have been put on the flame or on the blech or on the crock pot or on the warming plate, whatever the situation was, and they made a mistake. What's the deal with the food? And then the final part of tonight's shiur will be a general picture of crock pots, a lot of halachas that relate to crock pots, and perhaps best practices and the best crock pot to invest in from a halachic point of view. I'm not going to say that anyone has to throw out their crock pots and buy a new crock pot, but if you're going to be in the market for a crock pot, I will share with you the best crock pot from a halachic perspective. Okay, so good evening, everybody. Let's begin. So first, we're going to talk about 4 different points of having a guy, a Gentile, help a person in the kitchen on Shabbos as far as warming up foods. So, number one, we know that you can't just take foods out of the refrigerator and put it on a flame or put it on a blech directly. What if you have a Gentile? You don't have a warming plate and you didn't put it up before Shabbos. You have food in the refrigerator, you want to have it warmed up. Or let's say you have cholent, which we said, if it's a liquid and any other things that have liquids, that you can never warm up to be Yatzla this bow on Shabbos. But can you ask a guy to warm up the food for you? So here, the Shulchan Aruch says clearly that in all of these halachos of warming up food for Shabbos, both on Friday afternoon, Shabbos, whenever there's an issur to warm up food on Shabbos in whatever prohibited way, it is prohibited equally to ask a non-Jew to do it. And therefore, if a food is cold and you would put it, you'd ask a Gentile to please put it on the fire, that would be usher to do. And not only that, but the Shulchan Aruch says it would be usher to eat afterwards. Believe it or not, it would be usher even b'di'evet, even though the food was already cooked. And no issur d'oraisa was violated because once it's fully cooked, there's no issur d'oraisa. It's only an issur d'rabbanan not to put a fully cooked food onto an open flame or whatever other situation. It's only an issur d'rabbanan. Nevertheless, the Chachamim made a very strong gzeira that you shouldn't even have be able to eat it if it was done b'di'evet. Now, let's say you're in the you have a person who's been working with you for many years and she knows the kitchen maybe even better than you, certainly better than your husband. So she's in the kitchen on Shabbos and you're sitting in the living room, you're reading, you're at shul or the kiddush, you come home and lo and behold, your Gentile, let's call her just for lack of a better word, Maria, who's been with you for so many years and knows exactly how you eat and knows exactly how you like your food, you come home and lo and behold, there's a pot of soup that was in the refrigerator, you know, for the past few days. She put it to be heated up on Shabbos morning on the blech, and there's a pot of soup waiting for you. Or she took a kugel right out of the refrigerator and put it right on the blech, directly onto the blech, without any inverted pan or anything, and it's sitting there waiting for you. Do you remember that we just said a moment ago that if you ask a Gentile to do it, then not only can you not ask a Gentile, but it's not going to be permitted to eat that food afterwards. It's not even going to be able to be eaten cold afterwards. It's mamash like not kosher for the rest of Shabbos. Well, here the Mishnah Berurah says, if you didn't ask, if they did it on their own volition, so they don't have the right to make your food inedible for you. And therefore, if they did it on their own volition, without you asking them, that you can't ask them, and they shouldn't do it. But if they did, they don't have the capacity or the wherewithal to aser, to prohibit that food on you, and therefore, you will be able to eat it at least once it cools down, because you can't benefit from the prohibition that they violated of having heated it up. But if they did heat it up, then once it cools down, you are permitted to consume the food. However, if you're there, or you're able, you know that this is going to happen, you are required to say, please don't do that, please don't do that. We didn't set it up properly for putting it on the flame or the blech or whatever the situation. Don't do it for us. Thank you so much. Okay, that's number one. You cannot ask a Gentile to warm a food for you on Shabbos. Number two, what about the opposite? Sometimes you have a flame on, sometimes you have the electricity on, and you used the, you cooked whatever you cooked, and you warmed up whatever you warmed, and now it's Shabbos afternoon at 2 p.m., and you finished eating. You finish the crock pot. You don't need the crock pot to be still plugged in. You finish the food on the blech. You don't need the blech for the fire to still be on. So you cannot directly ask a guy to turn it off. You can't say, please, you know, if they turn it off on their own, that's a different story. You're not benefiting directly. They're not warming something up in a positive way and handy and allowing you to enjoy it. They're just turning it off. So if they turn it off on their own, that's one thing. But if you definitely cannot ask a Gentile to turn off a hot plate, to turn off a flame, to turn off a crock pot, unless there's some very significant need, saving money on the electricity or saving money on the gas is not sufficient. If there's a big danger, for whatever reason, all of a sudden there's a big danger, you have your, you know, you had your pot on, it was just you and your husband were having the meal together, you had your flame on, and all of a sudden, Shabbos morning, you have your 17 great nieces and great nephews coming to your house to visit. And you don't want to have a flame with 17 little kids running around and they're going to be in the kitchen. You're scared. Okay, maybe in that kind of case, there's a great need and it's a little bit, and it's dangerous. Then maybe you could ask a guy, a Gentile, to turn off the flame. But barring an unusual circumstance where there's a great need, one is not permitted to ask a guy directly to turn off the flame, turn off the hot plate, turn off the crock pot. That would be an isser, of course, of Amira Lenachri. That was the second point. The third point regarding a Gentile, I think we might have mentioned it last week, is there is one possibility that you can avail yourself, two possibilities, that you can avail yourself to the help of a Gentile. And that's, let's say there's the following situation. You have a hot plate that's on a timer. Right now the hot plate is off. And it's going to be off for the next hour or two, and it's going to turn on, let's say you're having lunch at noon on Shabbos day. And it's now 10 o'clock in the morning, and at 10:30 the timer is going to turn on, and turn the hot plate on, you're going to have a hot plate. So you cannot place anything on this cold hot plate right now, because you're setting it up right now to be in a situation that you're going to be warming it on Shabbos. You don't want to put something directly on. Unless, of course, it's a non-adjustable hot plate, and you hold like those opinions who say you can put on a non-adjustable hot plate. You can't put it on a... you can't put it down while it's cold, because you know it's going to be turning on. However, if the hot plate is off right now, and you're going to ask a Gentile to put it on the hot plate that's still off, but will go on later, that would be permitted. That, the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa says, is a leniency that can be very helpful, that if you do have a fully cooked food, and let's say even if you don't typically put it directly on a hot plate, you can ask the guy, while the hot plate is still off, and not yet turned on, to put it on that cold hot plate, even if the timer will turn it on. That would be permitted to ask a guy to help you warm up that food. Finally, the last point that I want to talk about of a leniency when you might be able to ask a guy is the following. The question at hand really intersects with a bigger question of, can you ask a Gentile to perform an Isser Dirabanan in a case of a great need? Let me give you some examples. Let's say there's no Erev in town, and you don't have wine for Kiddush. So the Shulchan Aruch says that if you don't have wine for Kiddush, and there's no Erev in town, and carrying in your town without getting into the details of Erevin is only also Derabbanan, because it's not a time center, it's not a Times Square. You know that we have Central Avenue, those of you who live where I live, we have Central Avenue, Broadway, those are the big streets by us. That's not like Times Square. carrying there, even without an Erev, would be a violation that of only a Derabanan. And if you don't have Kiddush wine, so asking a Gentile to carry wine where you wouldn't be able to make Kiddush, and it's only a Derabanan place to carry anyway, that the Shulchan Aruch says would be considered what we call a double Derabanan, a Shvus de Shvus. Number one, asking a Gentile to do a Malach is itself only Derabanan. Number two, even the halacha that the Gentile would be violating, which would be carrying on Shabbos, in this neighborhood is only Derabanan. Some neighborhoods would be Daraisa, but in this neighborhood is only Derabanan. So you have a telling the guy Derabanan and a carrying in a neighborhood where it's only Derabanan, and you have a great need, the need being that you're not going to have Kiddush. You're not going to have wine for Kiddush. Then the Shulchan Aruch says there are those who are lenient. Letzorech Shabbos u'bishas hadchak. If it's absolutely necessary, one can be lenient in that case. And the Mishnah Berurah says that when do we rely on this situation of a double derabanan, of asking a Gentile to do something that's only derabanan, in a situation of great need, shvus to shvus, b'makom tzorech gadol, or for a dvar mitzvah gemura, for an essential need, or for something that is absolutely a mitzvah, like being able to make Kiddush. Or, for example, says the Mishnah Berurah, if you don't have any other hot food for Shabbos. If you have no other hot food for Shabbos, you can ask the Gentile to carry it from outside of from somewhere where there's no Erev, so that you could have hot food for Shabbos. So we see that the Mishnah Berurah permits, when you don't have any hot food for Shabbos, and the Gentile you're gonna ask the Gentile to violate an Isser Derabanan so that you could have hot food for Shabbos, that would be permitted. So if that's the case, let's now leave the area, the realm of Erev, and come back to the realm of cooking on Shabbos. Cooking, of course, I'm not speaking of. Cooking is Asur Daraisa. I'm speaking of Shehiyah or Chazar. I'm talking about warming up fully cooked foods and putting it on a blech or putting it on a flame. If you have no other food and you have no way, let's say you have a blech, but you have no way, you have nothing on the blech, you have no cholent up in a crock pot, the cholent spoiled, the cholent burnt, you have no hot food for Shabbos, you are permitted, again, when you have no other hot food, you are permitted to ask a Gentile to put fully cooked cold food onto a blech and perhaps even onto an open fire if you don't have a blech. That is the leniency of the Mishnah Berurah in the halachas of asking a Gentile to help you. Okay, are there any questions on this point of asking a Gentile to help before we get to the next topic, which will be the topic of what to do if you made a mistake on Shabbos. Yes, that's correct. Okay, so let's go to the next section of the shir, and this is going to be a side point that will bring us to a very important idea. The side point is the following. You might have heard of a concept called Kidra Chaisa. Kidra Chaisa is a topic that the Gemara presents, saying that if you take raw meat and throw it into the cholent right before Shabbos, right as Shabbos comes in, then you don't need a blech. Let me explain what I just said. We know that you can't leave food on an open fire when Shabbos comes in because we're worried that you're going to stoke it. Shemi echate begechalim. However, the Gemara says the following. Why would you be prompted to stoke coals? Because you want to make it cook more quickly. Says the Gemara the following. If I have something raw, like meat, that takes a long time to cook, that it cannot be ready for the Friday night meal, even if I would stoke it, it can't be ready for the Friday night meal because it takes a long time to cook. So definitely I'm having it for lunch. But since it's for lunch and it's going to be on this flame or on this crock pot for 12, 15, 18 hours, it will cook just fine even if I don't stoke it. So in such a situation, the Gemara says, you don't have to worry that that anyone in the house is going to stoke the coals, because for Friday night, it's not going to be ready even if you did stoke it. And for Shabbos lunch, it's going to be ready even if you don't stoke it, so without any stoking. So in such a case, the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch says, you're permitted to put meat in a cholent, meat in a pot, not just things that will cook quickly, but something like meat that doesn't cook, it takes a long time to cook, right before Shabbos. Immediately before Shabbos. That's the halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. However, if we would follow this, a lot of things would become lenient. For example, if you don't have a blech, or you didn't have time to put up your crock pot earlier, just wait till Shabbos is about to begin, drop in something that's raw, some raw meat right before Shabbos, and you don't have to worry about any of the halachas that we spoke about of lining your crock pot, putting on a blech. You solved all the problems because we're not going to come to stoke any coals. However, say many of the Achronim, Rav Henkin and Rav Soloveitchik and the Chazon Ish, all come together and say the following. They say that this leniency does not apply nowadays. You know why? Because just about everything that we have with our ovens, you can get it ready by Friday night. Let's say, what's the thing that takes the longest to cook? I don't know, like a 15-pound turkey? Well, how long do you cook a 15-pound turkey? I'm not the world's greatest turkey cooker, but I'm assuming 3 hours, maybe? So, I might be wrong, but if it takes, 3 hours is the longest we basically cook anything, if you have a big roast also, you'll cook it for 3 hours. Well, 3 hours could be the end of my Friday night dinner. From before Shabbos, it takes me an hour to come home from shul, and then 2 hours till I get to benching. So by the end of the Friday night meal, even something like a 15-pound turkey, like a gigantic roast, could be something that would be ready because of our good, very effective and hot methods of cooking that we have nowadays. And therefore, they say, the whole leniency of Kiddush Chaisa that permitted you to put something into a pot right before Shabbos, because you're certain that it will not be ready by the Friday night meal, simply does not apply with our cooking. And therefore, they say one cannot rely on this leniency of Kiddush Chaisa, because it is very possible you would stoke it, because you can possibly get it ready for the end of your Friday night meal. That's why almost all the poskim say this heta does not apply. However, it's important to know that Rav Moshe Feinstein says, sorry, the Gemara says it's permitted. Don't tell me that just because you have a different kind of cooking, that makes it aser. Since the rabbi is permitted, since it's the chazal permitted, there's a low plug chazal, and they said it's mutter in all circumstances, and even bizman hazeh, one can be lenient with putting a piece of meat immediately before Shabbos. Now, I just want to comment two things. Number one, maybe even those who prohibit it because the food could cook quickly in our very strong heating ovens and stovetops, maybe you could argue that a slow cooker, which by definition is a slow cooker, maybe even those who say you can't put your food up to in a Kiddush Chaisa situation to put that raw piece of meat right before Shabbos because it definitely can cook by this evening, but in a slow cooker it won't. So maybe even the stringent opinions here maybe would permit a slow cooker. And maybe they would permit putting a piece of meat into the challen pot, into a slow cooker, into a crock pot, immediately before Shabbos. But nevertheless, there's still additional concerns that the poskim say you should avoid putting raw meat right before Shabbos, because you have to put it in right before Shabbos. Right before Shabbos. I mean right before Shabbos. And if you do put it in right before Shabbos, you might be playing with fire, literally and figuratively. If you do, if you end up missing Shkia by a minute, and you thought you were going to put this piece of meat in the chalent or meat in the whatever else you were going to have for Shabbos lunch a minute before Shkia, because it has to be right before Shabbos, immediately before Shabbos, and you were off by a minute, your clock was off by a minute, you put it a minute after Shkia, God forbid, you just violated a terrible a question of an issur d'oraisa of cooking on Shabbos. And that's a very dangerous, precarious situation. So many poskim suggest, don't do this heter of Kiddush Chaisa. But why am I sharing this halacha with you if it's something that we really do not use nowadays? Because this concept informs us for a very different area. What happens, and now we're going to sort of come back to the issues that we talked about 2 weeks ago. We spoke about Shehiya. Shehiya is a Friday afternoon. You come home late from work on Friday afternoon. It's a short Shabbos. You get home from work at 3 o'clock. So your chalent is not half cooked before Shabbos, so you have to have a blech. But you are so busy getting the chalent up that and getting everything ready and getting the kids' house clean and the kids bathe and yourself get showered and dressed for Shabbos, you forgot to put up a blech. That means you violated an Isser D'Rabbanan. You didn't do an Isser D'Oraisa because you didn't do any cooking on Shabbos. You put it on the fire before Shabbos. But by leaving a chalent or any food or a soup on the blech that's not half cooked, when Shabbos comes in, you violated Shehiya. you violated an issur d'rabbanan of leaving food on an open flame. And you know what? That's going to be prohibited to, it's going to be prohibited to eat that food, even if it was done by mistake. That's how severe Chazal treated these issurim d'rabbanan. That even if a person does shehiyah by mistake, they forgot to put up the blech. Guess what? If you forgot to put up a blech and the food was not half cooked before Shabbos, the food is not kosher. Yep, not kosher till the end of Shabbos, even if you did it by mistake. Okay, but now listen to this. The Mishnah Brura, in his commentary on the side of the Beir Halacha, suggests the following. But what happens if the food that you put up is for lunch? It's for lunch. Maybe we could argue that if food is designated for lunch, like a chalent, do you remember we just learned in the discussion of Kidra Chaisa that if something is there for lunch, we're not worried that you're going to stoke the coals? Because you know if it's there for the next 12, 15, 18 hours, you don't have to worry about raising the flame because it's going to get there by itself? Well, maybe if the food that you left on the blech by mistake, wrongly, incorrectly, but it's for lunch, we will let you eat it. Because maybe, at least b'diyeved, we could rely on the fact that since it's for lunch, you don't have to, you're not going to have the motivation to stoke the coals, which is the whole reason for the Chachamim making this prohibition, requiring us to cover the flame and requiring us to put on this blech. But if it's for lunch anyways, designated for lunch, it's going to have the same logic as this Kidra Chaisa, which also is something that you don't have intent to eat tonight, but rather tomorrow. And then we're not worried you're going to stoke it, because even if you stoked, it's not necessary to stoke because you're having it many, many hours from now. Okay, that's one case where you made a mistake with the Eved, and we will be lenient if it is for lunch. I'm going to talk about one other case where you made a mistake. Not a case where you made a mistake on Friday, but let's say on Shabbos, somebody made a mistake and put something directly on the blech on Shabbos. And this happens all the time. Why? Because not everybody is part of this shir series like you are. All of you know that you're not permitted to take something out of the fridge and put it directly on a blech on Shabbos. But the people who did not come to our shir series, there are plenty of people, wonderfully from Orthodox Jews, who are completely careful with all areas of halacha, but are not aware of this halacha that we don't put cold, fully cooked foods, even if they're fully cooked, we don't take cold foods and put it on a blech. A hot plate, yeah, many people do, but at least the blech, nobody puts cold food. We're not supposed to put cold food onto the blech. And you go to somebody's house, and guess what? And they did. So what did we learn? We learned that sometimes when you violate these halachos, it makes the food not kosher even b'dieved. And even if it was done by mistake, are you allowed to eat that food? You know, you go to somebody's house for Shabbos, and they a gracious hostess, and she says, and I wanted to make sure, you know, I made sure not to, you know, I didn't go to shul this morning, I went to shul late, or I came home from shul early, because I wanted to make sure that the kugel would be piping hot. I came straight home, I didn't stay for the Kiddush, I left before the rabbi's speech, I came straight home to take the kugel out of the refrigerator, put it straight on the blech, so it would be piping hot, because we love you so much, and we're so glad you're able to be our guest this Shabbos. So meanwhile, in your mind, what's going to go off? You're going to see the bells are going to start ringing, and you say, uh-oh, they just did Nesina Mechadash, which is what we spoke about last week. Remember last week we said there are six permitted ways to heat up food on Shabbos, and putting it directly onto a blech without any inverted tin or a non-adjustable hot plate or a kedera gabi kedera, those are all permitted, but just put it straight on a blech, nobody permits that l'chatchila. So therefore, this food might be not kosher. And certainly for the people who do it themselves, maybe even me, the guest, I can't eat their food. Their kashas is perfect. You trust them 100%. They just didn't know this halacha in Hilchas Nesina Mechadash or Chazara on Shabbos. So I want to tell you that you can eat the food. And I'm going to tell you why. There's a general rule that applies whenever something already happened and it's now b'dieved. If there is any opinion who says that it's permitted to do l'chatchila, then you, even if you don't hold that way, even if we don't hold that way, are permitted to eat it b'dieved. So let me explain what I just said. Even though you and I don't know everybody on this call, Baruch Hashem, a lot of people here, but most of us are Ashkenazim. If there are any Sephardim, I apologize, but you'll see I don't have to apologize because life will be a little easier for you. But for Ashkenazim, none of us put food on a blech on Shabbos. And therefore, we can't do it. However, there are some Sephardim who follow Rav Avadia Yosef, many Sephardim. Rav Avadia Yosef happens to have a leniency. Rav Avadia Yosef says that, you know what? You can put food directly on a blech from the refrigerator. Now, Ashkenazim don't follow that, but there's somebody who says that. And not only does he say that, but he has another wild leniency that almost none of the poskim accept, but he does say that even if this is a liquid 49%, the majority is solid, but there's 49% liquid, he says we follow Rove to determine that something is considered a solid, and therefore, let's say you have a cholent. Rav Avadia Yosef would say, you could take a cholent, you could take meatballs and gravy, which is 49% liquid, 51% solid, and put it from the refrigerator directly on a blech on Shabbos. We don't hold from either of those 2 points. Ashkenazim don't hold from either of those 2 points. We hold you can't even take a kugel from the fridge and put it on a blech. And we hold that any liquid in any dish is considered a liquid and cannot be heated up even in a permitted way because you're heating up a liquid to Yad Soled Espo. But since there's that one opinion, Rav Avadia Yosef holds that these things are permitted, therefore if it was done b'diyeved post facto, then everyone is allowed to eat it b'diyeved because there's at least one opinion who permits it, l'chatchila. That is the principle of if anyone permits it l'chatchila, then everybody, even if you don't hold from that permissive opinion, everyone holds that it will be permitted to eat b'diyeved. Now, I have to be honest. If you opened up a Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa to find out what's the halacha, if something happened already, it was done by the Eved, you know what he says? He says, these halachas are very complicated. And they depend on many factors. And please ask your local Orthodox rabbi. And I will tell you the same thing. If the point of these shiurim are to figure out how to do things ideally, if it's a b'dievedika case and something was done by mistake, there are so many different factors. Is it Rabbanan? Is it Raisa? Was it Bishogig? Was it done intentionally? How cooked was it? So many different factors. Present the question to the rabbi, and I have to tell you some of the hardest shilas that I've gotten were these shilas. The reason why they were hard is because I couldn't call anybody, and I couldn't look it up anywhere, because it came to my house on Shabbos morning, and the family's waiting for their, could they eat their chant or not? So that's why they're some of the hardest shilas that I received. Obviously it's not that any lives were standing in abeyance based on my psak, but nevertheless, a family's chalent is a serious thing. So if there are any halachas that if something happened and you made a mistake, ask a shaila. That's what I wanted to share with you. Okay, any questions about this section about if something happened by the Eved? You can write it on the chat if you have any questions. Otherwise, we're going to go to the next part, which is going to be the final part of tonight's shir, and that's the halachas of crockpots. We're going to deal with numerous aspects of crockpots. So in 2 weeks ago, we spoke about, somebody had a question. Let me just see what this question is. Okay, that's a private question. The person just asked me the question about the Kedera Blechs. Please ask me afterwards, because it's a very specific question. I'm not going to deal with it publicly. Okay. So now let's begin to speak about crockpots. Now, when you put up a crockpot on Friday afternoon, we pointed out that the food should be at least half cooked before Shabbos. If the food is half cooked before Shabbos, you could just leave it in a crockpot and everything's great, perfect. However, if the food is not half cooked before Shabbos, then you have to cover the flame. How do you cover the flame? You have to line the interior cavity, all of it, not just one piece of aluminum foil, because that's not going to cover the other sides, the perpendicular sides. So you have to cover, you're going to need at least 2 pieces of aluminum foil to cover the entire interior. And you should, just for good measure, to be, really frum and to fulfill other opinions of Rav Aaron Kotler, cover the knobs also. Not necessary, but it's a great, great thing to do. That's one halacha. We also learned that if you wanted to take food and taste the cholent Friday night, right? You want, like in the yeshivas, they like to do that. So then you're going to take it out of the crock pot and put it back on. Then you must, when you return it, also have a lining of blech, because you're only allowed to do chazar if you take it off and put it back on. You're only allowed to do chazar and return something to a flame if there's a blech there. So even if your cholent is fully cooked before Shabbos, but you want to have the Friday night cheating and taking having a taste Friday night, then you must line your crock pot also as well, period. Okay, that's what we learned in previous weeks. But now I want to raise a fascinating question that really took the Torah world by storm in 1995. 1995, I was in Eretz Yisrael, and it was the time that Rav Shlomo Zalman was nifta. Rav Shlomo Zalman Oroch is nifta. I was zochet to be in Eretz Yisrael. I was in yeshiva that year, and I was learning, and I had the zochus to attend Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's levaya. 2 weeks before Rav Shlomo Zalman was nifter, he published his last tshuva. And his last tshuva threw the Torah world into a tizzy. And it might have even been the most famous tshuva in that 10 or 20 year period. And unfortunately, he never had the opportunity to clarify it. And even if you open up the Shmir Shalas Kilchasa, he says, I wanted to speak to my Rebbe, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, about this tshuva, but alas, he passed away before I had the opportunity to clarify it. Rav Shlomo Zalman said that crockpots cannot be used on Shabbos. I'm going to explain why, and I'm going to explain a solution, but that's what he said. And just to illustrate with a cute anecdote that I heard from Rav Herschel Schechter, Rav Herschel Schechter told us in a shiur once when he was talking about this topic, he said that around that year, 1995, maybe 1996, you know, as the word got out that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says you can't use crockpots, again, we'll explain in a moment, his wife came to him and said, Rabbi Schechter, I don't know what she called him, Rabbi Herschel, I heard that Rav Shlomo Zalman says you can't use crockpots. And he said, I don't understand the tshuva. I don't understand why that should be. Everyone does, and the whole world does, and everybody does. What could be the problem? And anyway, lo and behold, the next Shabbos, he said, where's the crockpot? She said, oh, it broke. So Rav Schechter said, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach broke my crockpot. His wife threw it out. Because even though her husband thought there was nothing wrong, but Rav Shlomo Zalman said it's a problem, so she threw it out. Okay, so let's see what the question is, and let's see some solutions how to deal with it. When I was a Boy Scout in 6th, 7th grade, we learned that when you cook, and I might have mentioned this the first week of the shiur, when you cook at a cookout on a teepee, my father, who's Baruch Hashem on the shiur with us, told me that you make a teepee fire lay, and different ways that you could, lay the pieces of wood to light a fire, and you cook on top of that. When I was a Boy Scout, we learned you don't cook on fire. You don't cook on fire. You know why? Because fire burns, chars the outside, and is not hot. You cook on coals. You cook on coals. That's how they used to cook. Not on fire, but on coals. And that's why we had all the concerns that you might stoke the coals. Great. Now, the way they used to insulate foods before Shabbos is they would, excuse me, the way they would insulate foods in general is you had a pot and you left it surrounded with coals. And if it was surrounded with coals, it would stay very hot for very, very, very long periods of time. So the Chachamim were nervous that if you do that, you might adjust the coals. You might stoke them a little bit or shift them a little bit with your pot, and you might come to ignite those coals. And therefore they said, we don't want you to ever wrap foods to keep them warm on Shabbos. That's called hatmana. Hatmana is to insulate, to wrap, and it's usher to wrap foods on Shabbos. On Shabbos, if you have a hot thing on Shabbos, let's say you serve the soup, and there's one person who davens at a later minyan or who didn't walk to your house yet, so you serve the soup to your family, and you want to keep it hot for that person who'll be here in 20 minutes and half an hour, you don't want their soup to be cold, it is prohibited to take a towel and to wrap that soup on Shabbos. Now, that's usher on Shabbos. But on Friday, there are also circumstances where you're not allowed to wrap foods on Erev Shabbos. When? If it's Mosif Hevel. If it's in a situation where heat is being injected into this system. So for example, if you have a hot water urn, the old hot water urns, I'm not talking about a pump pot. I'm talking about those steel urns about 3.5 feet tall with a spout or a spigot on the side. Sometimes they have a water gauge outside, sometimes they don't. And you would take an insulating jacket and slip it over that hot water urn. You know, for example, those that are embroidered with the beautiful words, L'chavad Shabbos Kodesh, that would be Chilul Shabbos. Even if you did it on Friday afternoon. Why? Because you're insulating something, even on Friday afternoon, in a way that there's continually heat being injected into this system, into this hot water urn. Now let's think for a second. What is happening with a crockpot? Again, a regular classical crockpot where you have the base that comes up on the sides, and you have the ceramic insert that gets submerged into that base. This is, there is heat that's continually being injected into this system, and it's being insulated by the walls, right? It's not just sitting on a flame or sitting on a heating element. It's being insulated by the walls. So says Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that should be a problem with the crackpot, because it's doing hatmana, it's insulating, even though it's being put there on Friday afternoon. We're not talking about anything being done on Shabbos. On Friday afternoon, a person is insulating their pot, bedavar hamosif hevel, in a circumstance where heat is continually being injected into this system, into this crackpot. And therefore, Shlomo Zalman, 2 weeks before he died, said one is not permitted to use a crackpot. Now, we have to analyze and understand what he means, what is the problem with insulating, and we're going to come up with a solution and why nowadays most people do use crackpots, but perhaps with one minor adjustment. Let's understand for a moment what the problem with hatmana is. The problem with hatmana is that you're insulating. Typically, we assume that it's a problem when you insulate all around, on all sides, all six sides. That's definitely a problem when you insulate. Whether you insulate on Shabbos, it's always aser. And if you insulate on Erev Shabbos, it's only aser if there's a heat that comes in, like a heating element, like a crackpot, for example. But the Rama tells us that if something is sitting on top of... Let me back up. The Shulchan Aruch says if it's sitting on coals, the fact that the... Here we go. I'm just going to look for... if this... You see this piece of paper? These are the coals. And this is the pot. This is my cup on top of the paper. So if you have the bottom of this cup is sitting on top of the coals, that, the Shulchan Aruch says, constitutes hatmana, and you're not allowed to leave a pot sitting on top of coals. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. And that's what the Sfaradim probably practice. However, the Rama, for us Ashkenazim, say, no, that's okay. You could have a pot sitting on coals. Why? Three words. Kavan, because, since, shemegula limala. It is uncovered, it is not covered on top. But, my friends, let me ask you, what does the word on top mean? Let's look at this pot. I have a cup here. What does the word on top mean? Does on top mean it's open over here, on the lid area? There's nothing insulating the lid. The lid is not considered an insulation. You have to violate hatmana, this isur derabanan, you can't put something on top of the lid. So therefore, there's nothing covering the lid, so that's why it's permitted? That's what the Rama means, kevan shemegula lamala. That's what lamala means. Or maybe, what could lamala mean? Maybe lamala means it's permitted because it's open. There's nothing insulating the side of the cup. It's only prohibited when the sides are covered. But if the sides are open, then it's permitted. I just presented two ways to explain the word lamala. Does lamala mean that it's permitted to cook with your pot on the coals because it's open up here? Or because it's open over here? And based on those two ways of understanding, the nafkamina will be, the distinction will be, what is the status of a crockpot? Because on one hand, the crockpot is open on top. So if the Rama has permission that you are allowed to do hatmana, if it's open on top, then a crockpot is open on top and a crockpot is totally fine. However, if the Rama only permitted to do hatmana because it's megula lamala, and lamala means the sides, well, when it comes to a crockpot, the sides indeed are not open, are not megula. And therefore, since the sides are indeed covered and insulated, crockpots would be problematic. And that's the issue that Rav Shlomo Zalman probably presented, and therefore he was concerned that since the heights, the walls of the ceramic insert is insulated by that base, by the outside of the base, around the sides of that metal part, around the sides of the body of the pot, on the sides, the height of the pot, and there's heat coming into the system, then it's going to be prohibited to set up a crackpot, any crackpot, on Friday afternoon. Every crackpot, every Shabbos. Now, I want to share with you a solution to this. And you might be familiar with, but now you can understand why. When the poskim speak about why hatmana and when hatmana is prohibited, Rabbeinu Tam, one of the main Rishonim for Ashkenazim, writes that hatmana, insulating or covering over pots before Shabbos or on Shabbos is only prohibited if it is complete insulation, complete wrapping, or rubo, rubo or kulo. The majority of the pot has to be wrapped. That's when with the Torah, that's when, I'm sorry, the Chachamim prohibit hatmana. So now listen to this. If I elevate somehow, before I tell you the solution. So if I have a crock pot over here, this is my crock pot, and it's sitting inside the base, so it's covered over here, and over here, and the walls, it is majority covered, and therefore, it potentially could be a problem. At least, it might be a problem. Rav Shlomo Zalman said it's a problem. Now the solution. If I have a way to somehow elevate just a little bit that base of the crock pot from the bottom where it's supposed to sit, I will expose the bottom layer of that insert, of that ceramic insert. If I expose the bottom layer of the insert, so look what's going to happen. The top, the lid is anyway not insulated. Now I'm lifting up the bottom a little bit also, and now the bottom is not insulated. Furthermore, when I do that, I also, since I lifted up the pot above the walls, there's a little ribbon around the circumference of the top of the ceramic insert that is above the walls, and that also is revealed. So if I add up the area, I know I'm getting a little mathematical now, if I add up, does anyone remember the area of a circle, the top of the lid? Pi r squared. So you could do your math. I'm not going to, you know, test any of you on, because we're about to talk about the area of the walls, which is going to be a little more complicated. But if you add up the area, remember, Rabbeinu Tam said it's only considered hatmana if the majority is covered. Well, if you have the top uncovered, and now the bottom is also not touching the floor, it's not insulated, so you could add up this area, plus that ribbon around the top that you've elevated out of the walls, if you add up that bottom and the top and that ribbon, you might be able to get the majority of the pot being not insulated. And that's the source why people suggest that you should take tiny little balls, take some aluminum foil, crumple them up into little balls, a millimeter wide, 2 millimeters high, and put your crock pot down on top of the suspended, a millimeter above the base. It will still cook. Maybe it won't be as steaming hot, but it will still cook just about as well. It will still keep your chalent hot just about as well. Maybe instead of having it on the setting of heat 4, you'll have to put on the setting of heat 5 to compensate for the fact that it's not sitting flush against the bottom of the crock pot. And if you elevate your crock pot a little bit, then presumably even Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach's concern should be alleviated. Because if his concern is that you're doing hatmana, you're insulating, well, here you made sure that the insulation is not covering the majority of the crock pot, and that should be a solution. Now, this brings us to one further point. I'm not telling anybody to buy a new crock pot or to throw out your crock pot. I just told you how you could use your crock pot and eat it too. Well, not eat it, but you could have your cake and eat it too. But if you are in the market for a new crock pot, I would encourage you to, and I'm not being paid, I'm not getting any commissions from the company, but West Bend is a company that manufactures slow cookers. Crock-Pot is one brand, West Bend is another brand. Now, I looked online quickly, I saw Walmart has them, they range from $50 to $70, so they're not terribly expensive, maybe a few dollars more than a Crock-Pot, but it's around pretty much the same range. West Bend Crock-Pots are basically no-walled Crock-Pots. As opposed to a Crock-Pot where you insert it, the slow cooker, into that cavity, and you have those walls insulating it from the outside, West Bend's just have a flat bottom. And it heats up the crock pot just from the bottom. It's sort of like a very well-designed hot plate that keeps the chalent pot very well, heated very well. But it's not surrounded from the sides like a typical crock pot. So if you're in the market for a new crock pot, I encourage you from a halachic perspective, it's worthwhile to get a West Bend. And we actually, our crock pot broke. So we did exactly that. We got a West Bend and we're very happy with it. There's actually another advantage of having a West Bend. And I'll tell you why. Because if you're one of those people, like myself, I like the nicest time of the week for me is Friday night after everybody's sleeping. So Friday night, everyone goes to sleep. I sit, I could learn quietly, no one disturbs me. And most importantly, I could cheat and nobody could catch me. So I go to the kitchen and I take some chalent at about 11:30 at night, 11:45 at night, Friday nights, and nobody ever knows, except, I guess, all of you. So when I do that, I take the chalent pot out, and I follow all the halachas of Chazar, I take it out, I have in mind I'm going to return it, and I have a blech there, and everything's fully cooked, and I don't put it down, I hold it in my hand the entire time. But there's a halacha that the Shulchan Aruch writes, that when you do Chazara, take off and put back on, with all the halachas that are required, which we're not going to discuss now, it is a problem to do chazara into an oven. You could do chazara on top of a flame, on top of a blech, I mean. You could do it on top of a fire, but not into an oven. Because into an oven is more problematic. It's more, the heat is more intense, it looks more like cooking. You're not allowed to do it into an oven. Well, that issue might apply by a crock pot. If I want to cheat on Friday night and have a little bit of chalent and then put it back in to the cavity of that base, that metal cavity of the base where the element is, and I'm going to reinsert it, that sounds like chazara letoch hatanur. And Chazal said, in the Shulchan Aruch passage, that I'm not supposed to do a chazara, returning a pot, taking it out to taste, and then putting it back in, letoch hatanur, into that oven. And perhaps this cavity of the crock pot is like an oven. Oh, solution? Solution is, like I just mentioned, the West Bend brand. The West Bend, which does not have a cavity. It's a flat-based crock pot without any walls. So you're not putting something back into a cavity that would be like Chazara Toch HaTanur, which is very questionable halachically. Rather, you're just putting it back on top of a heating surface, and that is permitted l'chadchila. So therefore, for two reasons, I encourage you, again, I'm not saying anybody has to buy a West Bend. I'm saying that if you are in the market, I would encourage you, once you're getting one anyway, or you're going to buy a gift for somebody who gets married or whatever it is, who wants to make better chalent. So I would encourage you to not get a crock pot, but rather a West Bend slow cooker, because you have both advantages. You don't have the problem of Reb Shlomo Zalman, who's nervous about the sides, which you'd have to solve by those balls elevating the pot. And secondly, you also have the ease of taking something off the fire and putting it right back onto the fire. That's a better way to do chazara, and therefore the West Bend has those advantages. Okay, let us finish off with two more points this evening. Let's do one more point about chalent. So this happens quite often, actually, and unless you really know what you're doing, when you make your chalent and you have it down to a science, you always put the right amount of water in and you put it at the right setting, so your chalent always comes out perfect every week. And if that's the case, please let me know where you live so I can come enjoy some of it. However, in a house like mine, we are always experimenting. You think, like, you know, you've been doing this for 15 years, you should get it right by now. But nevertheless, so no chalent is ever the same. Sometimes there's too much water, sometimes there's too little water, sometimes I leave it on high, low, medium. And we always, invariably, once in a while, you find out that the chalent is burning or is dried out and it needs more water. So to put cold water onto a flame, a heating element, into a kli rishon, a pot that's cooking, the chalent that's cooking, that's an issur d'oraisa. Definitely can't do that. The question that we want to talk about is, what about taking hot water that's being cooked in one pot, which in English we call an urn, and transferring that boiling water, that hot water — I won't use the word boiling, I'll talk about very hot water — that hot water from the urn, which is a one pot, into my chalent, which is another pot, which the Gemara calls pina, removing mimecham lemecham, from one urn to another urn. Here, one urn has water in it, the other urn has water with beans and barley and meat and kishka. So the halacha is that it is permitted to take water from one, from that water urn, for example, and to pour it into a chalent pot. Now, ideally, the way it should be done is the following, and this doesn't matter, this is any kind of urn you have, whether it's a tea kettle, whether it's a pump pot, whether it's the old steel cylinder urns, all those are options. The way to do it is you take the cholent off the fire, because you're not supposed to, as we'll talk about this in a moment, you're not supposed to mix a cholent while it's on the fire. So you have to, or pour anything into a cholent on the fire, because that will also mix it. So you take the cholent off the fire with the halachas of chazara, meaning you have in mind you're going to return it. There has to be a blech to put it back. It's fully cooked. Well, it's burnt. It's definitely fully cooked. It's burnt. It's dried out. You're still holding in your hand, and it helps to have another person, because to do it by yourself, you just need a third hand. You take the cover off, and then you put it underneath the urn, and you add water from the urn, from the pump pot, into this cholent. Or, if you have a kettle, again, you take it off the... You take the cholent off the heat element, you put it down. Again, if you don't have any other hands, if you have somebody else, then you keep on holding it. You always have to have a hand on it, because that's one of the halachas, the criteria of the five requirements of chazara, that you can't just let go of it if you want to put it back on the flame. So you're holding on to it, you take off the lid, and you take a tea kettle. And also, you're lifting it up from off the blech, pour it into the fire, pour it into the cholent, and put it back down, put the lid back on, and return the cholent pot to the blech. That's ideal. Hold on, let me just finish this, and I'll take your question afterwards. That's ideal. However, what happens if the cholent pot is not in a situation, for whatever details, and it could happen, I don't want to go into now, you can't just carry one to the other. And you're not going to be able to make close, or with the way the spigot of your pump pot, or the spigot of your hot water urn, doesn't reach. You can't fit the cholent pot underneath it. So then, the only way to do it is to take the hot water from the kli rishon, from the urn or from the pump pot, fill a cup with hot water, and then take that hot water and pour it into the cholent. Meaning, take the cholent off and pour hot water into that cholent, and then put the cholent back on. Are you allowed to use that intermediary kli, that intermediary cup, if you can't pour directly from the kettle or the urn to pour it directly into the cholent pot? So here, that's machlokas. It's better to avoid using that intermediary kli. However, if you are unable to pour directly from the urn into the cholent pot, then one is permitted, mikra hadin, one can rely on those who are lenient and allow using that intermediary kli, that cup in the middle, even though the cup is a kli sheni and you're pouring it back into a kli rishon. Mikra hadin, fundamentally, we assume that would be permitted if necessary. I will add one more point, and that is, maybe this is what you're asking, you're wondering, Dr. Bell, is this going to make your hot water urn a fleishachs? Because, okay, I know you well, doctor. So if you have the steam from your meat going straight up 2 or 3 inches from the spigot or from the spout, that could be a problem. However, if you hold it 6, 7, 8 inches away, that the steam is not going directly in, there won't be a problem. So if you do have to, so you could hold it in a way that the steam is not going, from the steam from the cholent is not going directly. When I say steam, I mean visible steam. You don't have to worry, oh, maybe there's steam. No, if there's no visual cloud of steam that's going, connecting your cholent pot, the meat from your cholent pot to that spigot, then you don't have to worry about it. Okay, so if there's no like anan haktoras connecting them, then you're fine. Okay, let's just... It has to be a visible steam. It's only if it's a visible steam. Okay, I'm going to look at the... Right, so Tumah is a different story, Mikvos is a different story. I'm just talking about here in Bishul on Shabbos. Okay, I'm going to look. There's a question. Okay, so just to clarify, if somebody has a crock pot, you don't see this question, there's a private message to me. If somebody has a crock pot and they want to taste the food Friday night, so the only way to do it is if there's a blech. How do you have a blech? You're going to have to line your crock pot with aluminum foil completely. That means two pieces of aluminum foil perpendicular to each other, one this way, one this way. And then you'd be able to take it out and put it back in. And it happens to be, if you have the regular crock pots, some poskim don't like you putting it back into the crock pot, because that's like chazor letoch hatanur that I mentioned. And that's why I suggest if you have a West Bend crock pot and you're just taking it off a surface and putting it on a surface, that would be better than taking it out of a cavity and putting it back into a cavity, because putting something into a cavity is more problematic. So if you have a classical crock pot, some poskim suggest that instead of taking it out and putting it back in, it might be safer to very, very, very carefully take off the lid on the fire, which you usually don't like doing, spooning out ever so carefully just from the top without taking it out of the cavity of the crock pot and putting it back into the cavity of the crock pot. But that's because there's a problem of putting something back into the cavity of the crock pot. So if you are the type of person that likes cheating on Friday night like I do at 11:45 Friday night, and taking something from the crock pot, it's probably worthwhile to consider a West Bend if you're going to be doing this regularly, as opposed to using a crock pot where you're going to have to return it into the cavity, which is called Chazara Lesoch HaTanur. Okay, next question. This is a public question. You could look at it. Is one permitted to wrap a challah in foil and place it onto an overturned pan on a hot plate? Or is there an issue with hatmana? Excellent question. When I talk about insulation means for the purpose of insulation. If you do something for the purpose of cleanliness, which most people, when they wrap something one time in aluminum foil, it's typically for cleanliness purposes or to keep the thing from falling apart, then it is permitted, because that's not called insulation. That's like the pot. So you are permitted to take a challah in one layer of aluminum foil and put it on a hot plate with an overturned pan that is permitted lechatchila. However, if you have two coatings of aluminum foil, the outer coating is to insulate, that would be prohibited on Shabbos to put it in a case where it would be warm to have that insulation. Next question, that's a private question, you're not going to see that. So the question is, if you're putting aluminum foil inside the crock pot, is that insulating the crock pot? That's a great question. The answer is, I don't think so, because that's lining. That's not trying to keep the heat. The point of insulation is to elevate the heat. When you're lining the crock pot with aluminum foil, you're not elevating the heat. I think, if anything, you're probably diminishing the heat. So I think lining the crock pot will not be considered a problem of insulating. Okay, I'm just about finishing. I have one more thought I wanted to share with you, and then I'll take any final questions, and we'll end the shiur, and we'll end the series. Let's talk about, what about stirring or spooning out of foods from a pot that's on a blech, that's on a flame, that's on a hot plate, or that's in a crock pot? Here, we have a very unusual situation. Typically, we assume that if something is fully cooked, it's fully cooked. Mevushal called tsarko, if it's fully cooked, there's nothing you could do to cook it more. It's fully cooked. And, for example, if you have a blech, then there's no problem of leaving a food on a blech. Even if it, and if once it's mevushal called tsarko, it's fully cooked, there's nothing you could do to make it cooked more. However, one of the main Rishonim, the Kolbo, writes that one is never, ever permitted to stir anything on a flame, even if it's mevushal called tsarko. Let me translate that into English. The Kolbo writes that if I have a fully cooked chicken soup, I have a fully cooked challant that's being heated right now on the blech, on the hot plate, on my West Bend, I'm not allowed to stir it while it's on the heating element. Why? No one really knows why. Because what are you doing? What are you adding by stirring it? You're not causing it to cook. It's fully cooked. Rav Moshe Feinstein says the problem is probably, the reason why, and this is how we pass it, you're not allowed to stir it while anything's on the flame. The problem is probably because we're worried there might be tiny pockets of uncooked food, and by stirring it, you're revealing those tiny pockets of uncooked food to places where they could cook, and you might be causing unintentionally those little bits of uncooked food to yes cook, which is not what we'd normally have thought. But maybe that's why it's prohibited. It's a big chumrah, but that's how we paskin. That when something is on a flame, you never stir it, period. So if something is on the flame, you don't stir it, nor do you spoon anything out. because when you spoon something out of such a cooking situation, since while something's on the fire, spooning something out will inadvertently also cause some movement, and therefore we will be concerned that maybe it might cause some uncooked pockets that may or may not exist to cook. However, I'm sorry? No, I don't think there'll be a minor sign. No, it would be also just because of this concern that it's called hagasa. Hagasa is the word that's used, the technical term that's used to mean stirring. However, if you want to stir something or spoon something out, then you can very easily take it off the flame, and as long as it's completely cooked, you're welcome to take it off the flame and stir and to spoon out of it to your heart's content. If, of course, it's not fully cooked, then you can never stir it, even if you take it off the flame, because when you take it off the flame, first of all, you're not going to be able to put it back on the flame, because it's going to be cooking something, you're putting something to cook on a flame on Shabbos. And even if you leave it there, if it's not mevushal kol tzark, if it's not fully cooked, then when you stir it, you're making it being able to cook more quickly, and that's possibly also d'oraisa. There are two leniencies to this prohibition. Again, the halacha is, and this is the last point, we'll finish with this, the halacha is you're not permitted to stir or spoon out from any pot that is on the flame, on the hot plate, on the crock pot, on a blech. Two leniencies. Number one, if something is a pure liquid, like water, like a clear broth that's already fully cooked, that's boiled, well, what are we worried about? That maybe there might be some pockets that weren't cooked? That doesn't make sense if you're talking about a pure liquid, like a pure broth. And therefore, you can stir it even while it is on the fire. Halacha l'maaseh, if you have a pure broth chicken soup Friday night, or for whatever reason, I don't know why you'd want to stir water, but if you had a water boiling up on a blech or something, or in a crock pot, for whatever reason, you have hot water that you're boiling, you're allowed to stir it, you're allowed to spoon out directly, you're allowed to ladle out directly from it, even while it is on the fire. That's one leniency. Another leniency is that which the Chazon Ish teaches us, and he says, if for whatever reason, you're not going to be able to return the item back, take it off and return it back, which is what we suggested, right? You want to stir it or spoon out, you have to lift it up, take off the lid, spoon out what you want, stir what you want, and then put it back on. Let's say, and this happens in camps, or we have a caterer here of one of the premier Five Towns caterers. We have the caterer of Chapanash here on this call right now, and Mr. Plow cooks for 1,000 people. He has a Pesach program with how many people do you have? 1,000 people, 1,200 people. And imagine the size of his cholent pot or his chicken soup pot Friday night. You have a cholent pot that serves 1,200 people. How in the world are you going to lift that off and stir it or spoon something out and then put it back on? It's nearly impossible. It weighs probably 400 pounds. So there the Chazon Ish, if it's impossible to take it off and put it back, then the Chazon Ish says one would be permitted to spoon, not to stir it, but at least to spoon some out to have that Friday night, snack. So, Mr. Plow, when you have your next gigantic Shabbaton, hopefully with all the COVID situation, you'll be able to have get back to your catering. I'll get back to our simchas, and you have a Shabbaton for a bunch of yeshiva guys, and they're gonna want to have their Friday night cholent, and you probably will just put up a separate cholent for them Friday night because you're very careful like that with your with all the halacha. But if they have one big pot, they're gonna take it off Friday night, and it's too heavy. It's 400 pounds. The Chazon Ish says it would be permitted to spoon out, not to stir, while it's on the fire, but at least to spoon out while it's on the fire and take it into your bowls. It happens to be Moshe Feinstein does not permit that. But that's another situation where one would be permitted to at least spoon out while something is on the fire. Okay, that's what I wanted to share with you tonight. If anybody has any questions, you're welcome to write them on the chat. Otherwise, I want to thank everybody for joining our series. Bez Hashem, the recordings will be made available on the Shari Tefila emails. If you don't get the Shari Tefila emails, you're welcome to contact Congregation Shari Tefila in Lawrence, and we'll send you the email links. And I want to thank also especially the Schloss family from Deerfield Beach, good friends of the Seligsons. Thank you for joining all the way from Deerfield Beach, and to all of my neighbors And again, we have from California, Florida. And thank you to my parents for joining and to so many others. And again, I want to thank Mrs. Yael Hirsch for sponsoring this series in memory of her sister, Odelia Bas Shimon. And thank you all for joining. And I'm going to wish you a wonderful evening. Nice to have you. And look forward to learning together in the future. Be well. Have a wonderful evening. Bye-bye.